Hey, this is Eli Campbell. You know, Steamboat is renowned worldwide for skiing, biking, and all that our natural playground has to offer. We're fortunate, though, that the natural beauty here attracts more than just outdoor enthusiasts. From local legends to world-class acts, amazing musicians regularly play the venues in our little corner of Northwest Colorado. Join me as I explore the stories and experiences of these talented artists who bring unforgettable performances to Steamboat. This is your Steamboat Soundcheck. Eli Campbell here with you. We are at the Strings Music Pavilion. I am excited to be joined by one of my personal favorite musicians, G Love. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, brother?
Oh, man, I am doing awesome. You're here in Steamboat as part of your 30th anniversary tour.
Yep.
30 years since you released the self-titled G Love and Special Sauce album back in 1994.
Yeah,
can you really wrap your mind around that?
I mean, it's crazy. Kind of two things that I think about when I think about it. Like, one is that, just we're so lucky to be still, you know, have our health and, you know, physical, mental capacity and passion to be able to do what we do. And just because of along the way, like doing this thing, you know, there's a lot of talented people that we've seen, you know, never really get a good shot or mess up their shot or die. Or anything. So there's a lot of things that can happen in 30 years. So we count our blessings for that. And then the other thing is that we really have to throw it back to the fans. Because, you know, truthfully, we never really sold a lot of records. And everything that kind of we've achieved has been on the stage. And that's, of course, totally, you know, up to people, you know, showing up and wanting to come see us play and partying with us. So you really got to hand it all back to the fans. So thank you guys out there, because it's the way I look at it is that, you know, the people have given us everything in our life. Like, because music, everything in my life is from music at this point. And, or, you know, my childhood's from my parents, and everything as a grown person's been through my music. So for people to support that, they've given us everything, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it. And you look back 30 years, you know, back then I feel like music was a little bit more set in a box. It was pretty genre specific. You were the first musician I remember being exposed to that was really seamlessly blurring those lines, a little folk, a little blues, some hip hop elements. I'm wondering if that was like a conscious decision that you were making to try to stand apart from everything else, or if it was just a natural progression of your songwriting based off of who you were listening to and who you were influenced by.
Yeah. Kind of both, honestly. So I started out kind of learning Beatles songs. That's kind of how I started learning how to play guitar, learning to sing and play Beatles songs and other songs in that kind of folk rock genre. And then I started playing harmonica when I was 15, and that led me to get into harmonica rack, which immediately put me into the world of Bob Dylan. And like, so early on, my big influences were like the Beatles, White Album, you know, Bob Dylan's greatest hits, Donovan, not my friend Donovan Frankenreiter, but Donovan from the 60s. Yeah. And then the Velvet Underground, their self-titled record was a big influence. And I was doing a lot of writing. All my writing was like that. And then, so in the late 80s, in my high school, like, no one else was doing that. Yeah. Everyone was like doing The Cure and stuff like that. So that did make me kind of stand apart there doing my folk rock thing. But then I started taking that to open mic nights, and then I said, oh, other people know who Bob Dylan is, you know?
Yeah.
So I did always have this desire to want to do something different, to be original. And so I went to the record store and I said, look, is there anybody that you can, put me onto that's solo acoustic, guitar and harmonica, singer other than Bob Dylan and Neil Young? And then they gave me this John Hammond record. I bought the John Hammond record, Country Roads, which was a 1963 Vanguard release. And he had cut that record when he was 20, I think. And so that record was his renditions of a lot of blues songs.
Yeah.
Most of his career are his interpretations of other artists. So that way it was like a roadmap back to the Delta blues. And so that's when I really shifted my focus to from folk rock into Delta blues, and went on that journey to try to learn all these records. And lyrically, I started writing about the city of Philadelphia where I was from. So I was calling it streetside blues. So it's kind of like urban blues. And I was writing about, you know, the basketball courts, the graffiti writers, the homeless people, bike couriers, any kind of city
I-76.
I-76. Yeah. And then, yeah, so then, and then the hip hop thing kind of came later just by accident. When I was a street performer, one night I had my greatest night on the street. I made $60, two beers, a joint, and two cigarettes. And I was like feeling like this, you know, this musical euphoric high. And I started rapping the lyrics for Eric B. and Rakim's Paid in Full over one of my riffs. And it was like at that moment, though, I knew, I was like, oh shit, you know, no one else, like there's no other kid, you know, rapping and playing guitar right now in the world. And that I think was true until we found out later that Beck was coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
And then coincidentally, the Roots, who also grew up in Philadelphia, and we all graduated high school in 1991. And so this was like there was something going on in the water, and like we were the first generation of kids to be listening to hip hop and absorbing it. So therefore it came out of all of us in different ways. And so a lot of it had to do with the timing and what I was exposed to in the city that I grew up in. But for sure, so it was both. It was both the desire to be original, to be on that search, and then also just where I was from. But that's the thing I tell, like, anybody who's up and coming, like, do you have any advice for, like, younger music? Well, always just be original and just have that the hustle, the work ethic, because that's the most important thing. Like, anybody can play guitar and or other instruments if you put the work in. And look, you have to be really, really great at doing something that everybody else does if you're going to get over. And if you're not that, you know, naturally talented like I wasn't, then you really need to have something different, you know. So that's the thing.
And it certainly helps to have a unique sound, which you had, but curious if that made it a little bit more challenging as you're going for that first record deal or first time you're trying to be played on the radio back then. People didn't know how to fit you into that predetermined mold. Did that bring some obstacles for you?
Yeah, it was like a thing that we, absolutely. I mean, you could go into the Tower Records in Philadelphia and we could be in the alternative rock section. And then you go into the HMV in Boston and you'd be in the hip hop section.
Yeah.
So they marketing was always kind of an issue for us because, we were just trailblazing our own little thing. And it was both a blessing and a curse. Again, it was a niche thing. You know, when I look at like current music and what's really popular right now, especially amongst like a lot of live music goers, like you look at like the new American reggae scene, which obviously that's a genre now, new American or American reggae, right? That's, and it's something that spawned from, you know, Sublime and then Slightly Stupid and on down. But well, you can just look at the festivals. It's like if you look at Cali Vibes or Florida Reggae Rise Up, they all have the same bands on every bill for every festival. I'm saying that's it, we're part of that scene, kind of a little bit fringy, but look, you know, we never had that. Like, I guess my point is if you're a new American reggae artist right now and you're any good, you have a good chance to do a really great career right now.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's going to get saturated. It probably already is, but there's a lot of people that are coming up. And then they're my friends. But I'm just saying, we never had that. We always had a thing like, what is this? You know what I'm saying? So it was... But look, I don't think that I would trade it, you know, because, you know, we were despite the marketing dilemma that we presented for the radio and the label people along the journey, like, you know, we're still here, and I guess that's the proof.
Yeah, and, I mean, you kind of just mentioned it. You know, you're kind of on the fringe of that new American reggae scene. But as you were coming into your career, you're an East Coast guy out of Philadelphia, and you're finding that your music is kind of striking a chord with that West Coast surf scene, and you're finding a natural fit with people like Jack Johnson. You mentioned Donovan Frankenreiter, who I just interviewed a couple days ago he was in town. Why, you know, it seems like culturally your backgrounds are pretty different. So why do you think the music fits so well together?
You know, it's, you know, like there's two sides of me growing up. One was city kid. And then we also, you know, I was lucky enough to spend summers at the Jersey Shore. So I was also a surfer and, you know, and part of that surf culture and, on the East Coast, so maybe that kind of, and truthfully, like a lot of songs that I wrote on the front porch at the Jersey Shore, you know, so I think that summertime vibes always kind of resonated in our music. So I think, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of, you know, Jack was a fan and, you know, that led to our collaboration, which, you know, helped us both, you know, tremendously So I think that, and then once Jack and I's, you know, musical brotherhood and relationship flourished, that, you know, kind of opened the door even further into that culture. And, you know, of course, then when Jack signed Donovan and then Donovan's career took off, and it's just like one big happy family. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Like, just to kind of be friends with those guys, especially as like a kooky surfer that the East Coast guy like me, to be able to, you know, be friends with these great surfers and also to, you know, have helped to influence their music. And it's completely vice versa because, sure, we influenced Jack coming up and then, you know, his music right back came back and influenced me. And the same thing with Donovan, just spending time with Donovan and, on and off stage throughout the years. Of course, his music's, you know, I can name a handful of songs that I wrote that are influenced by Donovan, and the same thing with Jack, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it just helped increase your fan bases by kind of melding between each other, which is part of the reason we're here celebrating 30 years.
Yeah.
And now that you're looking back and revisiting a lot of this music that you were barely in your 20s when you first put pen to paper and wrote this down, is there anything specific that you're kind of going back through that is kind of showing you how much you've matured as a musician or just a person in general?
You know, it's cool. Like, look, I mean, the first record's been obviously been the catalyst for my whole career. And, so we play those songs. They're part of our regular show. Not all of them, but many of them. And this tour, we're playing the whole record. And, you know, I think what resonates a lot with me, like really delving, cause this show specifically is the performance of almost the first record, almost the entire first record. There's a couple songs we're leaving now just because it just feels like the show gets too long because the record's kind of long.
Yeah.
But look, yeah, man, you know, the writing to me really stands up as being truly, you know, original and lyrically, you know, very poetic. And I can kind of say this not like bragging, but kind of looking almost as an outsider, as like I'm 51 now, like I was 20 then.
Yeah,
you know. So, but looking back at that young version of me, you know, the writing is, I think it's really great, and you know, even a song like Cold Beverage, which obviously has been a big hit for us. And look, you know, people might say, oh, that's like a lighthearted, that's like a novelty song or whatever. But if you really break down that song, I mean, that's a really profound song. I mean, the lyrics. Okay, I'm singing about cold beverages and it's a drinking song, but look, the lyrical content on that is that's poetry, man. And the music too is very in a lot of ways to me that's like a perfect song, and I know because I've mapped the song out and tried to recreate it to complete failures like a million times. Like there's something with that song that really is something special. So. And that's like most of the songs on the record. So, I guess the thing that really still resonates, and a lot of the things, you know, like a song like This Ain't Living, which is a kind of an ode, or a, you know, a commentary or a visualization of the homeless people in Philadelphia that I saw growing up, and their plight, you know, like to sing those lyrics now 30 years later and the whole entire way along the way is, I mean, of course, the homeless problem in America is worse than ever, and a lot of the most of the cities in our country have terrible problems with, you know, the epidemic that's been created by, you know, heroin and the pharmaceutical companies, and there's a lot of so that song to me even resonates harder now. I think it's really cool body of work, and I'm happy that I made it, you know. And the other part of it is this too, is that you couldn't even make a record like that now because there's Pro Tools. And if people don't know, that's like digital way that everybody records now, because you couldn't have made that record right now because it has so many mistakes or little quirky, slurchy things with the tempo or the tuning or the vocal pitches. A lot of that stuff I wouldn't let fly in the studio now, but it all works in this kind of soupy kind of vibe on that record. But like, yeah, I don't think like the first two records we made were before Pro Tools, the self-titled on Coast to Coast Motel. So those records sound like they do because of that. You know, you can't really create that stuff anymore. Even if you set out and say, yo, we're going to do this record to 2-inch tape, I mean, you're not, because you're going to record 2-inch tape and it's going to go into the Pro Tools and you're going to do all the fixes because you're a human and you can't help it.
Yeah. But it helped make it sound more natural and fun. And I mean, just like what you guys were doing back then, and you were pushing the boundaries back then, and you're still pushing yourself to grow, which is evident on your most recent releases. You know,
Thank you.
Were doing some really cool collaborations with Kev Moe and Robert Randolph on The Juice, Luther Dickinson of North Mississippi All-Stars.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
they,
for knowing that.
Helped produce Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Yeah.
So where do you grow from here? What do the next 30 years have for you?
Yeah, I think like, you know, look, as we're talking about making records, I mean, you know, I mean, maybe other people don't know, but look, the music, well, you guys struggle with it too because you're radio.
Yeah.
So we're all kind of in this sinking ship, which is music, and we all do it because we love music so much that it's our life. But look, like making records is a good way to lose money. I mean, if you want to lose money, then go make a record, because there's really no other way around it. But that being said, so why would you do it? So, well, one is that, you know, you have to, as an artist, want to keep creating songs and performing them and recording them. So it's like a crazy addiction.
Yeah.
And then there's the thing that, you know, you want to keep producing new work so that you're relevant, at least to yourself and to your fans, that is a catalyst for touring, which, like we said, I said in the beginning of the interview, that's been the thing that's given us a life and a career to go do shows. So it's good to have new material to keep that forward momentum. And then probably the goal that like I have personally most in mind, right, my eye on right now, is to get a Grammy. And that might not matter to some people, and it hasn't mattered to me sometimes in my career, but I think that after we got a Grammy nomination on the Juice record, and that was just such a huge, you know, it just meant so much to me to get that kind of recognition. And that let me know that, like, okay, you know, I don't just have to watch the Grammys every year. Like, I'm there too, like as an artist. I just haven't been picked yet. And then kind of full circle to like where we fit in now that there's a Recording Academy slot for contemporary blues, right? Like that gives me a lane finally that I can actually be claimed, because that's what I am, right? I mean, what's contemporary blues other than you're rooted in the blues and you're pushing the boundaries? I mean, that's what I've done my whole career.
Yeah.
So So like knowing that I can participate in that lane, that's where I intend for like the focus of my records to be.
Very cool. Well, yeah. I feel like I could talk to you all afternoon, but you've got a sold out show to get to. So I'll let you get on to that. I am so looking forward to this. It's my wife's 40th birthday today.
Okay,
we bought
birthday.
20 tickets
oh my
to
God,
it.
Thank
so
you.
We're going to be here. But yeah, thank you very much for taking a little bit of time here out of your afternoon to come chat with me.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all of our listeners out here in Colorado. We love you guys. And you guys have always been number one for us ever since the first time we came here in 1994.